Ke noho ne ka apa ko o kolo kolo ko o ti iku e. O ka luna ka vai hana hana o Alexa di e ki ise. Ame ka luna ka vai hana hana o Lawrence M. Reiter. Ame ka luna ka vai hana hana o Derek H. M. Chan. E ho o halu ne. The Intermediate Court of Appeals now is set. The Honorable Alexa di e ki ise. Lawrence M. Reiter and Derek H. M. Chan presiding. And no ho, ila, ila, please be seated.
Council.
Case number CAAP-14-0001090, State of Hawaii versus Bianca Martin. Lars Edison for appellant, Ricky Zanderville for appellee. Argument on merits.
Council.
Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
Good morning. We raised, in our brief, we raised 9 points on appeal. To begin, there's one clarification of the record I wanted to make. In our brief, in regard to the issue of whether or not the judge should have recused himself, I suggested an email date. There was an email that was sent around to the various people that I say is a basis for the judge recusing himself. And I believe, Judge, if I may, the email in question, I think I put down it was sent on 2/19/14, but in fact it was actually sent around 1/4/13. That was 2 days after the shooting. So I think it was actually resubmitted over to the court right before trial or a motion hearing, and I put down the wrong date. That was the 40 date. The actual date of that email sent to everyone was 2 days after the shooting. So I just want to make sure that I corrected that before we began. Your Honors, we have 9 issues on appeal. I think the first one resolves it. I think the failure of the Tachibana warnings in this case, I think, are relatively clear. In this case, the judge gave a block advisement of the Tachibana rights and asked if he understood Mr. Morgan. He indicated that he did. This is the exact type of warning that the Pomeroy case said you cannot do. You cannot give the block warning. And the reason for that is because then when you do that and you say, do you understand, you don't know which right they're talking about. And this is the problem with the Pomeroy case, and has also been other cases that have come before the ICA. The Joseph case, the Ichimura case, these are cases I cited in my 28J letters, which I provided to this court. So both of those cases that this court has had have talked about the block, but just giving the litany of rights and then just saying, do you understand, is not acceptable because, you don't know which right they're talking about. Additionally, Your Honor, in the Ichimura case, referring back to the Han case, there was a litany of rights, but then they also talked about the mental health issues that were important. These are salient facts that the Han court talked about, and also the Ichimura case. In that case, there was issues of when you have these type of salient facts that raise your concern that someone might not understand it. That was the Han case that referred to federal cases, which talk about flight, that situations where somebody has mental illness or problems that the judge is aware of should be heightened level of concern for them.
Counsel, can we drill down a little bit on that? What in the record supports the notion that his mental state interfered with his ability to understand the rights that were being discussed with him during the Tachibana colloquy?
In terms of the actual Tachibana colloquy, I don't know if I'm trying to recall, Your Honor, anything specifically about that day or that time, but I would point out the entirety of the case.
Well, there was a 404 hearing, right? There were a fitness determination.
704, yes.
I'm sorry, 704.
Yes, Your Honor, there was, and the 3-panel was done on that case. In that case, the doctors, for some reason I'm blanking the doctor's name, it's in my brief, talked about in the 3-panel his prior suicide attempts, his depression, multiple problems that he'd had over the time. Certainly, Judge, I would say that alone would be enough. So there were a lot of discussion, and the report talks about his mental hospitalizations, suicide attempts in the past, and the diagnosis of him having significant mental issues. Additionally, Your Honor, throughout this case, there's, I think, certainly testimony was given, but also before the court, at the time of by the time of Tachibana, the final was done, they had learned that he had shot himself. He shot himself in the chest, which is not a normal thing for anyone to do. Obviously, just the facts of the case, hanging underneath the car, opening fire on people, before that, firing guns across the lake, his statements to people, the testimony of Misty, his girlfriend, about all the things that she had seen. Again, she talked about suicide attempts. So I would suggest that it was replete with references that would alert the court to certain mental health issues that he had throughout the entire case.
So your position is that evidence of a mental health issue, per se, is something that necessarily interferes with the understanding of a Tachibana colloquy?
No, Your Honor, I would say it's a salient fact. It's one of the things in the Han case talked about, an increased concern, an increased need to make sure we absolutely, that all of his rights are addressed specifically or talked to. In this case, again, he just got the number of warnings, and then do you understand it, which I believe by itself is enough. But added to the additional, the fact that his mental health illness raises another level of concern to the court. And I think following the cases, Judge, that resolved the case, I believe, right there.
So you don't see the three-panel evaluation as actually cutting the other way?
No, Judge, the Han case talked about the federal cases, and one of them was, of course, I'm blanking this moment, the name of it, but one moment, if I can. The Christian case, I believe it is, Judge. Christian Center, Christian. It's the federal case that specifically addressed it. I put it in my reply brief. And that is where they talked about the difference between, hey, just because you're competent doesn't mean you're doing a knowing waiver. Competency, I think the analogy was, it's about capacity. Are you able to understand? And this other scenario is about, do you actually understand?
Okay, but you're not really talking about competency. You're talking about fitness to proceed. And fitness involves the ability to understand the proceedings, understand your role, and whatnot. So as Judge Reiferth is referring to, there was a determination that he was fit to proceed, so that requires, doesn't that require a determination on the trial judge's part that he was able to understand the proceedings and be able to meaningfully participate in his defense?
Well, the fact that he participated in his defense doesn't mean that he was fine mentally. There are plenty of people who come to the trial court who have impaired mentally or are unfit to proceed. I can tell you as a criminal defense lawyer, I have them all the time. And it doesn't mean, just because you're competent, doesn't mean that you understand the warnings or there shouldn't be a heightened concern about it. And the judge suggests that should be one of the standard facts the judge take into consideration when they're giving the warnings.
So when you speak of salient facts, you're talking about salient facts at the time of the proceeding, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that goes along with the case law, Han, Pomeroy, the inability to speak English. So when you talk about the EMED incidents, you're talking about something outside of the trial, outside of the court proceedings, is that correct?
Yes, well, you were speaking of at the time of the
incident. So what is the threshold? Do we bring incidents from an earlier time and say that they are salient for the proceedings before us or before the trial court?
Well, I think the date of offense in this case is 2313, and the case went to trial approximately a year later. So I don't think it's not like we have a 5-year gap. Plus, the three panel occurred sometime after the initial time. So we're talking closer and closer. Sorry, Judge, Your Honor, excuse me. The 2313 is a date of offense. The 704 hearing request was on April 3rd. 6/21, 7/24, and 1/3, I believe, is the date that the letters came in. So we're talking about not a gigantic time before this occurred, you know, like years and years. We're talking about a matter of months. And certainly the testimony trial was not just so throughout the three panel, the time of the offense, Judge, well, the three panels afterwards, actually, the time of the offense, which is a long year prior to that, all these different things, which lasted for a long period of time. It was like just one incident. There are many abhorrent or aberrational behavior, certainly Misty talked about, his fear, his paranoia over time. So I think that altogether, Judge, would be the give the court notice there is an issue of heightened.
Were there any of those signals present at the time of the trial proceedings that the record would reflect?
In terms of my recollection of the record, Judge, I don't recall outbursts, you mean things? I'm trying to think if there's anything I could point to. I don't recall. I would have to look again. I don't recall any outbursts at the time. I do. These motions are all litigated, of course, but I don't recall anything. And there may be, I just don't recall.
Okay, thank you.
I'll be happy to submit something additionally if you'd like.
Thank you.
So moving on, Judge, I have nine of these. So I'm going to go through them a little bit if I can. Judge, in terms of Your Honor, the trial judge recusing himself, I know it's kind of a funny issue, the $5 donation. And on its face, it may not seem like much, but it kind of is almost a mask of the really the more profound underlying issue. That is, was it proper for the judge to be sitting as a judge in a trial of a judiciary employee? One that he acknowledged that he knew. It wasn't that he never met this woman before, knew this person.
Let me clarify something, though, that the person that received these donations was not a complaining witness or a witness at all to the case itself, correct?
Yes, that is an email done by the court reporter down there soliciting money for this. But the judge told the parties about it, revealed it to the parties in open court, but this is something that he had wanted everybody to know about, then a motion to disqualify him as kind. I certainly there's no pecuniary interest in the judge in this proceeding, I admit that, of course. But is this the kind of thing that someone from the outside world would say, is it proper for this judge to sit on this case at this time when a judiciary employee that the judge knew was the wife of one of the shot police officers? If you look at it from a period of from the outside world, reasonably, could you do that? I suggest, Judge, it raises some significant issues, a judiciary employee. And I think this raises it to something in the judicial conduct that, in this case, I suggest you should have not been the judge for this particular case.
Were there any other judges available in the circuit who had not made the contribution?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Does it matter to your analysis?
I don't think it does, Your Honor. Certainly, if that had been done, then another judge could have been summoned or at least looked at it. If they had given money, then perhaps somebody else or perhaps somebody from even outside of the circuit could have brought in.
But it's not the giving of the money that concerns you. It's just knowing the person. Here's the $5 you said.
Well, I would say any amount. I think that I cite something in the Connecticut rules which talk about any contributions should at least be thought of. I admit $5, Judge, is not a lot of money. But again, is it reasonable? Is it looking at it from the outside world? If you looked at this, would you be concerned? Would there be an issue reasonably that this judge should be sitting on this case when a husband of one of judiciary employees, a police officer, has been shot? And I suggest there's enough here to suggest he should have refused himself.
The rule of judicial conduct that you cited or your predecessor cited in the motion to disqualify. 2.11 talks about subject to the rule of necessity. How does that play in your position?
In terms of the necessity, I don't know. I think I don't have a great answer for that. I don't have a response except to say that the my client's right to have a fair trial or biased, impartial, or the judges to not present themselves reasonably to the public as somebody who might be not the right person for this case, I think would trump that. Again, there could have been another judge brought in, or I think these issues must, just because it might be difficult to find another judge, doesn't excuse a judge from not accusing himself or being disqualified in that situation.
Not necessarily, but there was no inquiry as to that.
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of. Moving on to point three. Your Honor, there's a number of different issues having to do with the statement of my client when he was found. He apparently shot himself in the chest and was lying on the ground. This is the day after the police came to the door. I'm sure the court will recall the facts of this. They came to the door and made an announcement, gunshot. This guy, Bubba, Mr. Trail, came out. They talked to him, put him in with a beanbag, shotgun to open the door more, sent the robot in, found him on the ground. They looked at him. He was lying there, basically prostrate, trembling. They come in with four guns trained on him. And he is seen to be, I think the word is, moaning. He has blood on his shirt, apparently bleeding at the time. They ask him to move his hands. He can barely raise them. And then they ask him to turn over, give him commands, and that's when he alleges he shot himself. Your Honor, I think the voluntariness aspect of it, I don't know if you can find a more compelling case that this is an involuntary in terms of your physical condition. When you shoot yourself in the chest, he's lying there on the ground, barely can respond, is moaning, and it's not just from the shot immediately they come to get him, there is a delay in the time. After the gunshot is fired, there's a delay when they send the robot in, when the police come in, Mr. Trail leaves. This is not just immediately. When they see him on the video, he was basically prostrate on the floor. This is a situation, as we talked about, I put in my motion, Kaylee Colio talking about this is a factor to determine about voluntariness, citing to, I believe, the Peterson case from, I think, Massachusetts, I believe, judge, which talks about physical impairment. In that case, a person in an ambulance being taken, that could happen due to voluntariness of the statement. This goes far beyond this. This is a person basically lying there on the ground after shooting himself in the chest. And I think, Judge, in terms of that voluntariness analysis, this would be a case where this was certainly not voluntary in terms of his ability to function at that particular time. In terms of the suicide, so then we have just the voluntariness of the study. Question then, should that have come into trial? So assuming that it was voluntary, if we could pass that, then you go to whether or not it should have been admitted as evidence in this case. I did not find a Hawaii case on point as to this issue in a claim. There is one, I'm sorry if I haven't found it. There is an ALR on the topic, which apparently indicates states have allowed it in. I suggest here, Judge, in this case, because of we have the three panel, which talked about his prior suicide attempts, and the knowledge that we gained, I want to say after the motion hearing, but I don't know how much I've learned that, but certainly at the time that he shot himself, when the hearing came up, the court had knowledge that the three panel doctors, he had tried to kill himself. While I understand that in certain cases it can be that a suicide attempt could show guilt, it could be a situation where it might show guilt. This is not the case that you can just say, oh, you shot himself, he just felt so bad about what he had done that he must be, we're going to let that in to show that he was, intent to do it. As the suicide attempt was used by the prosecutor in this case to show evil intent. This is not that case. And I think the Mann case from New Jersey gives a good idea about it. Certainly in some situations, maybe it can come in. I'm not saying it can never come in. But this is not that factor. And the Mann case talked about in these situations, a jury instruction should be given, or must be given. I don't say must, but should be given at the very least, to talk about the different things, why to a jury to explain it to them. The Mann case talks about is it the jury should be instructed, was there an actual suicide attempt made? Was it done to avoid the burdens of prosecution and punishment? And additionally, I believe, if they find, was it done for consciousness of guilt? And if it was not done for those purposes, it cannot be used for purposes of showing guilt. So at the very least, I would suggest it should not have been admitted because it doesn't go to showing guilt in this case.
Could I ask a question in that regard? What was the theory of the defense? What did they think happened? What was the presentation by the defense in terms of how they put together all these different facts?
As I believe it was there were a number of motions flying around. The second motion on limine, I believe the defense focused on 404B. That's what their argument was. The motion on limine to keep it out was that they thought there was 404B bad acts evidence, and that's how I believe they pursued it. And then, of course, the voluntariness argument. They said it wasn't voluntary. But in terms of how they approached it, I think it was the second motion on limine and 404B.
What is the theory of the case, the overall theory of the case, not just with regard to this motion?
As to, sorry, just if I may inquire.
What did they think happened? What was their, version of it? Were they saying that he was trying to engage in self-defense, that he was, you know, not in control? I mean, what was the theory of the defense?
Your Honor, I'm embarrassed to say I haven't read the closing argument in a while, and so I don't know if I can. I'm sorry, I don't have a great answer for that. I think.
All right.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. So I apologize. I don't have an answer for that. I don't. I'm sorry. So I don't have an answer. I assume it would be in the closing argument, opening argument, in terms of that. So I don't go any further than that. I'm sorry. So, Judge, I think certainly we would suggest that for 404B purposes, it should not have been allowed in. That was the way it was done. And I think just one of the things the government, I think, has alleged that they needed to get that in order to show that, to get the gun evidence. My suggestion is there's no connection between the two. The fact that they came in and they were able to recover the firearm right next to his hand would have been enough to connect all the dots in terms of the firearm. Him saying, I shot myself, or that in fact he attempted suicide, had nothing to do, I would suggest, with the recovery of the weapon. And the idea of the suicide did not need to be an issue before this court, because they were able to recover the weapon. So I don't think that really had anything to do with that particular issue. Judge, part of the next argument, if I can move on. 404B, Judge, it was painted as a 404B, and that for that it should not have come in. I'll leave my arguments, I think, on that a little bit. It's a little bit, I would suggest, just certainly there should have been some instruction given about it. We think the man instruction would have been good. If 404B is how it got in, and that's what the government did argue at this time, it was 404B to show motive, intent, and all those things. We disagree that works, and we also disagree that, we show there was no instruction given on this one. There was no instruction given on this one, which was framed as a 404B1, and then as we jump ahead a little bit, in terms of the other witnesses who said bad things about my client in the past, Sonia, his ex, and all these other people, there was no instruction about bad acts in terms of them as well. So kind of putting a little, saving a little time, Judge, The lack of this instruction, which under the Chong case, Judge, it should be given virtually strongly recommended given in every case. This is a case, Judge, that really needed it. This was a case that should have been given even without asking for it. That the failure to give it in a case like this, when you have the confession or the start of suicide, which is run under 404B, and these other statements. I know the government has raised some issues in the brief about whether or not it was specifically objected to. I think I addressed that in my reply. Some were specifically addressed it on, in terms of objecting. Some of them were a little bit different, in terms of not exactly for bad acts, things of that nature. So, but I would say, Judge, overall, when you look at the entirety of the 404B world, all the prior bad acts that came in against Kavika, that night prior, Sonia's testimony about things that occurred 6 months prior to, that you know, he wanted to kill cops under Pemberton and the other cases, Judge, that is far too remote and far too prejudicial for it to come in. But I'll move ahead, I think, my arguments, since I have nine. Judge, I will go to, I think I want to go to the jury instructions. And I have tried my best to make sense of them. What I would say, Judge, I have been looking at counts one and counts four. They're the ones, count one is against, dealing with Officer Hatata. And count four having to do against Officer Buvea. We have a couple additional ones that were done for Officer Buvea, the lesser included for attempted assault first. And I believe, let me make sure I get this right, attempted assault against law enforcement first degree that were not given to the, in regard to the other case. I will suggest no disrespect for the court, but this was very difficult to ascertain this. And the red light, my bad. Judge, I would just say the overall, there's no reason for one case getting two additional instructions and the other doesn't. And then as we talked about the Feliciano, the Capao, the Rolola case, all have lesser includes that were not given in this case that were are required to be given under the Flores case. You have to give them. If you have lesser included, they must be given. They won't be. But I'll reserve the rest of it.
Thank you. Please support. My name is Ricky Damerville, and I'm very happy to be here today. I haven't had oral argument before the Intermediate Court of Appeals in, like, I'm guessing 30 years. I come from a long line of mostly unemployed coal miners, so I'm going to refer to salient facts as important facts. And he started off by saying that the, in his view, that the Tachibana issue resolves this case. First of all, I'd like to thank the defense counsel for sending me this list of supplemental authorities on February the 16th of this year, because one of those cases was a case from this court, State versus Gregory Sato. And in the state's view, State versus Gregory Sato resolves the issue with respect to the alleged summary nature of the Tachibana colloquy, which is 141 to 129, 2017 opinion of this court. And basically, that Tachibana is indistinguishable from the Tachibana that was given here. And I know that the Celestine opinion of the Supreme Court comes after Sato, but I think it's important to the court, and the court can't take judicial notice of this, that Sato was pending on cert at the time that Celestine was issued. And the Celestine opinion by the State Supreme Court issued on April the 12th, 2018, in Sato was rejected, the application for cert was rejected on April 30th. And I know it's a little touch and go to attribute too much to a rejection of cert, but the exact same issue was raised in Sato that was raised in Celestine. And by rejecting cert, they rejected the argument that this particular colloquy by Judge Nakamura was deficient. So I'd like to thank for that. With respect to the mental health of the defendant being an important fact to consider and considering the Tachibana colloquy, you know, The courts have unanimously agreed that it's a totality of the circumstances case. And the totality of the circumstances here are that, yes, he had a 704 exam, but all of the examiners said, hey, his overriding problem is probably substance abuse. And if the substance abuse was not there or not available to him for months later, how does it continue to be an important factor? It's just not. And in this particular case, this trial lasted months. Okay, it started in February. It didn't end until April. This judge had plenty of time to observe this particular defendant in court to decide whether or not he had any mental condition whatsoever that would impair his ability to understand the facts. Another totality of the circumstances issue is this defendant testified at the voluntariness hearing held a short time before the trial. There was a voluntariness hearing in January of 2014. This trial started in February. And the defendant got up and testified and was cross-examined and gave appropriate answers to appropriate questions, both on direct and cross-examination. So under the totality of the circumstances test and under Sato, the Tachibana issue is a non-issue in the state's view in this case.
Did the trial court in this case make a determination that the waiver was knowingly, intelligently, and voluntarily made?
That with respect to I've been shot? Yes. Yes, the court did.
On the record?
On the record. There's an order granting the state's motion to determine voluntariness.
No. The Tachibana.
Oh, yes. Yes, it did. Transcript of April 14th, beginning at page 14. So are you Kiyaka Martin? Yes. You're the defendant in this case? Yes. Okay, are you thinking clearly? Yes. Are you presently sick? No. Within the past 48 hours, have you taken any pills, drugs, medications, or drank any alcohol? And then he says, ibuprofen. The court says, okay, you're suffering from pain. The defendant, yes. Despite your pain and the medication, are you able to think clearly? Yes. The court, okay, as I discussed with you before the state started the trial, or at the start of the trial, you have the constitutional right to testify in your own defense. Although you should consult with your lawyer regarding the decision to testify, it is your decision. No one can prevent you from testifying should you choose to do so. If you decide to testify, the prosecution will be allowed to cross-examine you. You also have a constitutional right not to testify and to remain silent. If you choose not to testify, the jury will be instructed that it cannot hold your silence against you in deciding your case. Did you understand what I had to say? The defendant, yes. The court, I have been advised by your lawyer that you do not intend to testify in regard to this case. Is this true? The defendant, yes. And is it your decision not to testify? Yes, it is. Mr. Strauss, are you going to suggest any more questions of Mr. Martin? Mr. Strauss, no, Your Honor. In this area? No? Okay. How about the state? No, Your Honor. The court? Okay. And what do you want to do then? Do you want to formally rest with the exception of David Carroll? And it goes on. So all the elements of Tachibana are there. Every one.
Except the finding that the waiver was voluntarily, intelligently, and knowingly made.
Well, you know, I don't think that's a Tachibana issue. That's a surmise when the judge is satisfied with the Tachibana.
Well, isn't that what Celestine discussed regarding a true colloquy?
You know, here's the interesting thing about Celestine. In Celestine, the issue was not that it's intentional, knowing, voluntary, and that was not it. In Celestine, when they talk about the elements, in Celestine breaks down in two portions. Basically, the first portion, which was not satisfied, which all the other Tachibana cases would have agreed with, and if they had ruled in Celestine on the first portion, there probably would not have been a dissent from the Chief Justice or anybody else. But in Celestine, the trial court failed to instruct, if you want to testify, no one can prevent you. That was the issue in Celestine. Now, the court went on in Celestine to say, well, in substance, we want more of a colloquy than we're getting. Basically, that treads on dangerous ground, because at one point, if you go beyond yes or no kinds of questions, then you get to the situation where he may be, it might be inferred by his questioning that it's overly coercive, and in that sense violates the defendant's constitutional rights. So I think Celestine, it could have been decided that element of Tachibana is not there, and move on. And that's why I brought up the Sato case and the correlation between Celestine and Sato, because if the court was really concerned about the colloquy in Celestine and not the fact that the element was clearly not there, they would have overruled, they would have accepted Sato for certain, because Sato had all the elements, just like we do here. Celestine did not. And that's the distinction. The court asked, and he touched on the question of why weren't the same lesser included given with respect to Mr. Hatata that were given with respect to Mr. Gobea. And he seems to indicate that makes no sense. No, it makes clear sense when you know that Mr. Gobea was shot at twice. Mr. Hatata was shot at once. So Mr. Hatata's, the crimes against Mr. Hatata were not attempts. Shot at once, hit once, he got all the lesser includes. Mr. Gobea was shot once, hit him, shot a second time, didn't hit him. And that's the distinction. It's not a very difficult one. The question with respect to talks about the fact that the firearm was recovered, and there should have been a limiting instruction, limited it all in some kind of way. I don't know what that limited instruction would have said. I can tell you this, I couldn't write it. You know, in Metcalf, which was before this court, Metcalf, there was supposedly should have been a limited instruction regarding marijuana usage in this court, and also the Supreme Court on cert review said, no necessity for a limiting instruction. Here, what he doesn't, well, I guess he pointed out a little bit, but police respond to this house. They know the defendant's there, there's somebody else in there. A firearm goes off. A witness comes out and says the defendant just shot himself. And at that point in time, they send in robots to try to find out what's going on. Well, if the court had limited, the trial court had limited to the state to the weapon was found at the by the body and had ruled out any statement made by the defendant that I shot myself, well, then the state would be left with a scenario of saying, okay, The gun was next to him, so it must be his gun. And the defense would have said, well, another person came out. How do you know that person didn't shoot the defendant? How do you know that gun doesn't belong to the defendant, belongs to this other person? So the evidence was highly relevant to intent. It was highly relevant to identity. It was relevant to the possession of that firearm. And under those circumstances, relevance, identity, all exceptions to what's generally called bad character evidence, it's clear that the court made the right decision with respect to that. Judge asked a question about what in the record supports his mental illness. The short answer is there isn't anything in the record that supports his mental illness, except if you come to the conclusion which most forensics experts say you should not consider, which is the nature of the crime. In forensic psychology, they say, you know, step away from the crime, the nature of the crime, and deciding whether or not this guy is crazy or not, because it's not relevant. Other than the nature of the crime and the fact that his own witnesses testify, well, this guy had been drinking and drinks excessively, and his witnesses testified, the defendant's own witnesses testified about his paranoia, not just about police, but about everyone, because they were trying to introduce evidence to say, no, I didn't, it's not that I intended to shoot a police officer, it's that I'm afraid of everybody. That was his testimony that came through the defense. There's no evidence of mental illness separate from intoxication. That's the issue. Let me see. It's easier for me if you want to ask me to address some of the questions that you addressed to him, because I'm in my advanced age, I'm not quite as quick with my pen. And I can answer those questions. The defense in this case, because he has raised ineffective assistance of counsel as one of his issues, the defense was a bit of a novel one, but you know, is that, I think it was Bruce Cutler who said that if but for the facts, I would have won all my trials. When you're confronted with tough facts, sometimes you have to come up with a difficult defense because that's the only defense that you had. And in this case, the defense was, you got the wrong guy, and that wrong guy didn't have the intent to kill police officers. Now that's a difficult defense to present because jurors don't think like that. They think more like me. That is, you're saying, I didn't do it, but if I did, I didn't intend to do it? And that's a very difficult defense to throw out there, but he did a pretty good job of doing it. So, for instance, when you talk about suicides, and by the way, this judge, who's accused of somehow being biased by a $5 donation, the record is replete with the help that he provided to the defense. And when I say help, he basically shut down the state with respect to hearsay statements when the defense was putting on all its witnesses. So the defense was entitled to testify about his mental paranoia and that he drinks but he doesn't do other drugs, and all of this stuff allowed in. And when he talks about there is an ALR out there with respect to the use of statements, I shot myself, and what's the import of it, That's right. The ALR was given to the parties by the judge. They didn't find that ALR themselves. The trial court pointed it out to them and provided them with the ALR citation when he was considering whether or not to allow that statement in. So,
Counsel, you mentioned the $5 donation.
Yeah.
And even though I don't think that the defense counsel's argument rests on that point, because I believe he says it's appearance of impropriety, even irrespective of the amount. And it's more a matter, I think, that the judge knew the wife of the victim. Still, what is your position on the rule of necessity point that Judge Gisay raised in questioning?
You know, I think when people ask me my position, I think it's probably the position of everyone who's lived in Hawaii for any length of time. I wish those envelopes would quit circulating because they circulate all the time. But it's part of our recognition of the concept of the family ohana. We're all in this together. And at the time that that email went out, he was not the trial judge for this case. That went out the day after the shooting. That case, it was still down in district court. It hadn't been signed. It hadn't been assigned anyone. And I guess on a personal level, and you have to understand that I had the privilege of doing this judge's first jury trial as a sitting circuit court judge. So I've known him for a very, very long time. He's a very fine judge. The embarrassment might be the smallness of the donation rather than the donation itself. So that donation aspect is just a non-issue. When you see a lot, those things come across my desk at least once a week.
Well, in fact, I don't think it was the central issue for counsel
right.
either. What I'm asking about is whether the reference in the to the rule under which the motion for recusal was made to the rule of necessity and
yeah.
its application in this case, and the question being, do we know or did we not know whether there are any other judges available?
You know, it's a big island, but it's a small community. And the biggest employer is and always has been, at least since the sugarcane fields closed down, has always been government. So when you say, well, this person was a government employee, an employee of the judiciary, you know what? All of the judges in Hawaii County would know who their employees are. So, yes, the issue of necessity is, yeah, okay, maybe you feel a little uncomfortable, but we're not going to let you kick it over to Judge Hara because you made a $5 donation and he didn't, and I don't know if he did or if he didn't. Basically, you could control your docket with $5 donations, but for the aspect of the rule of necessity. So, under the rule of necessity, he was looking at, well, Kona judges, they're going to know who the employees of the judiciary are in the county of Hawaii. It's just... There's, if we're going to rule out judges because they make, and I don't, you know, when we enacted 409, Rules of Evidence 409 and 409.5, dealing with the fact that we thought that people should be able to express condolences and sympathies without inviting, having people use it as evidence of guilt. When we adopted those rules, we did it for a reason. And the reason was social healing. And part of that is $5 donations. It doesn't impair a judge's appearance of impropriety, especially when he's not even the judge at the time that he made it. So if the court has any other questions, I'd like to... the statement that I shot myself. First of all, it was not subject of a custodial interrogation. There's no inference in the record whatsoever that police officers were, by telling him to put his hands behind his back or do this, that they were trying to invite a spontaneous statement. That's just not there. You know, the defense tried to meet the or eliminate the taint of the "I shot myself," which happens the day after he shoots police officers, by putting on the fact that he's committed attempted suicides before. They put that in. We didn't. They brought it up. It was part of the defense. Just because a person shoots themselves because they're depressed doesn't mean that they're depressed about their guilt. This guy had, in the testimony of the defense, was he had tried to commit suicide before. Now, what didn't come out is those prior suicide attempts were also probably substance abuse related. That didn't come out. But it was a defense. It was a theory that was worked by defense counsel. And I think the defense counsel, as shown by this record, was reasonably competent. He was just conflicted or confronted with overwhelming evidence of guilt. And I have a little note here of things not to forget, because in my advanced stage, it's very capable that I might. This judge had months during trial, months, to observe this defendant's conduct. And when defense counsel says, well, I don't, in response to one of your questions, he wasn't aware if there were any outpourings or suggestions of mental illness prior to the time that the ultimate tachibana was given. He doesn't know because he wasn't there. I read the entire record over the weekend. That was a major challenge. There isn't any. There was no outburst. There were no admonitions to defendant to behave yourself. Nothing in this entire record that stretched over 2.5 months. This court had an adequate opportunity to judge him. And the fact that he testified at the voluntariness hearing. And like I already touched upon, the fact that the reason for the different lesser included are two shots fired at Gouveia, one shot fired at Hata. And that makes perfect sense in the way that the lesser included were given. My concern, and it's not stated explicitly in the first opening brief or the first amended brief or even the second amended opening brief. It's not stated in there, but one of my concerns in the practice of criminal law in this jurisdiction is when the Supreme Court overruled Ha'anio and went on this course of in Flores of giving of lesser included. It didn't take the tact of saying that, you know, in other jurisdictions we have what's called lesser included offenses and necessarily lesser included offenses. And if it's a necessarily lesser included offense, you do not even have to look at whether the facts justify it. Because this bottom line lesser included has fewer elements than the master one, and if the master one requires approval of those elements plus all the others, then you have to give the whole litany of lesser includes. And we haven't gone there yet, and Flores doesn't take us there yet, but someday it might. So that's a concern, but there is logic and reason to the lesser included when you consider the two shots in one shot. It's been fun. I haven't gotten a message from her, so.
It's the light.
Oh, the light, yes. Okay, well, the light's on, but it hasn't turned red yet.
Okay.
2 minutes left. I want to thank the opportunity to be here. I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Council, your rebuttal?
And I believe my first hearing I ever had was before Judge Nakamura on the Big Island. I believe it was, he was a family court judge, it was above the liquor store in Kaiwan Corner, where they were holding court at the time, I believe. So I win on that. Your Honor, I have looked at the Sato case. I don't have the facts at my fingertips on it, but I do. My notes indicate that there was a finding of no salient facts, ones not like we have here. Your Honor, I would, in terms of whether or not the suicide issues were argued, clearly the defense objected. They filed motions to keep out that stuff, that information, and was denied by the judge pretrial. Judge, in regard to Celestine, my reading of it, I'm trying to read it carefully, and I would just, my reading of it is it seems, I don't want to rattle the boat too much, but it seems that it adds an additional factor. And it seems that it says that the court must also tell a defendant, is anyone forcing you not to testify? That is exactly in Celestine, which just seems like it's kind of new. That doesn't seem to be the way it was written in Han and Pomeroy and Tachibana, but it does say that in Celestine. So does anyone force you not to testify as one of the things that must be said or done? That was not done in this case. In regard to the mental illness, I do address it in the briefs, but I would just point out that there was a number of different things. His mental impaired EMED was presented as a defense in his trial. He filed a notice of intent to assert this EMED prior to trial. The three panel came back, as my note, my brief said, mental health treatment, suicide. Dr. Jackal, noted that Kiyaka had discontinued the psychiatric medication he originally had received at HCCC. Linda Ambrosia had indicated major depression disorder, severe with psychotic features. And then during the trial, there was a number of different testimony about Mr. Martin, and Mr. Trail indicated that Kiyaka was shooting the day after the officer shooting. He was talking crazy stuff, really weird stuff. Misty had testified he tried to kill himself, and I get the facts of this case. So I think in my reply, I talked a little bit about Christensen. In that case, that was cited by Han directly in the Han decision. The court was on notice the defendant's waiver might be less than knowing and intelligent because the court had already granted several continuances so the psychiatrist could examine for competency stand trial. That's similar to what we have here, the three panel that was raised. And it also makes a distinction between competency and that we're able to stand trial and the ability to be to raise an issue before the court as to putting them on notice of the defendant. So based on that, I will conclude my time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement.
All right. Well,